This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Falinski.
This is Jennifer Renee.
J.D. Doyle.
And Glenn Holt.
And on tonight's show, we're going to be talking to David Elliott from Washington. Even though it's a holiday, he will be here on via phone. And then in our second segment?
Yes, I have Kelly Smith. She's going to be talking to us about peace and enlightenment through the Avatar program, which nationwide has a lot of GLBT community members.
Okay, and what is that program?
Avatar.
Okay.
it's a program of enlightenment. There's several. It's to help you enlighten, to put away your prejudices, to break through the judgments that we have on ourselves and other people have toward us. And I've known Kelly for a number of years, and it's just terrific.
Okay, and we're still figuring out what we're going to do in the second hour. But besides that, we're also going to have This Way Out, News Wrap, and another segment. So that's tonight.
And queer music.
And queer music,
queer music, yes,
course.
Don't forget about J.D.
So what's going on in queer music these days, J.D.?
Well, the first song we're going to play when we have a chance between segments is a lesbian band from Milwaukee called Drop More Scarlet. So look ahead for that.
Okay. Well, and coming up in this month, we have the Houston Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. It's going to be happening September 22nd through the 24th. And this year, it's only going to be one weekend at one showcase. I guess they're sort of streamlining it a bit. And we'll see how that works out. We'll try to get some representatives on.
And Wednesday is the GLBT Political Caucus General Meeting at 7 p.m. at 3400 Montrose, Suite 207, 7 o'clock. So all of you out there, everyone is welcome in the community to come, whether you're a member or not, and participate.
And that's coming up. So we have a lot of things, and there's a lot of political work going on this month. And if you're interested in knowing more about it, you can go to the caucus's website, which is hglbtpc.org. A bunch of block walking and data entry, and because we have an election coming up.
Yes, and it's very important that our people win.
And one of them we're not endorsing in is Congressional District 22, which is Tom DeLay's district. And not only are we going to be voting on who's going to represent next term, but who's going to do it for the last, like, 2 weeks of the year.
Yes, that's
really
interesting.
Boy, do they not know what's going on.
Yes, well,
no kidding.
Part of planned confusion. And speaking of confusion, from Washington, D.C., we have David Elliott, who's calling in, and there's always confusion going on up there. David?
Well, good evening, Jack. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good evening. How are you?
We're doing fine.
We're doing great. Welcome.
Thank you.
So what's going on, David?
Well, you know, Jack, this past weekend I found myself hiking in the Shenandoah Mountains. At one point I was actually on the state line that divided Virginia from West Virginia. And to my surprise, when I was up there hiking, I noticed that the leaves up there already are changing. I mean, here we are. It's only Labor Day. It's only September 4th. And the leaves are changing. And that got me all excited because you know what is in the air?
Politics.
Politics. Elections. We're 64 days out. And
so,
I wanted to talk to you tonight, if I could, about a little bit about what's going on in terms of U.S. House races and also the U.S. Senate. And, Jack, you might recall that 1 month ago I came on this program and I made a rather bold prediction.
Yes, we made notes, too.
You made notes, good. I predicted that Democrats would capture the U.S. House. Well, since I made that prediction, there have been a number of developments.
And?
Well, two of the leading political prognosticators, if you will, the people who make these predictions for a living, a guy named Charlie Cook and another guy named Stuart Rothenberg, within the last 2 weeks have come forward and have themselves predicted that the Democrats will capture the House of Representatives this November. And, in fact, the Washington Post carried a rather interesting story on their front page yesterday. And I want to read you, if I may, one paragraph out of this story. It goes as follows. Privately, many Republican strategists fear there may be no way to prevent the Democrats from winning the House, where Republicans hold 231 of 435 seats. One prominent consultant, who, like many of the people interviewed for this article, spoke on the condition of anonymity, put the odds of a Democratic takeover at 75%. Another strategist, who has worked as part of Bush's campaign team, said he believes there is a 9 in 10 chance that Republicans will lose their 12-year-old House majority. That's the paragraph. Now, the other development I wanted to tell you about is this. At the beginning of the summer, way back in June, some of the experts who look at these 435 House races felt like there were 19 seats in play, 19 seats held by Republicans that could switch to the Democrats. These same experts now feel like there are 36 seats in play. Usually, my friends, as we get toward the election, as we approach it, you have fewer and fewer and fewer seats in play. But in this particular unique political environment, we are actually expanding the number of seats that are up for grabs. And I can tell you that the figure the expert cite of 36 House seats in play is actually a little bit conservative. It actually is more like 40 to 50.
Really?
Goodness.
That is what we're looking at this cycle. And let me tell you what this election battle is going to come down to between Republicans and Democrats. Republicans want voters to walk into the polls thinking about terrorism. Democrats, on the other hand, want voters walking into the polls thinking about, first and foremost, Iraq, but also a select number of domestic issues. The fact that our wages haven't really gone up significantly. The price of gasoline. Job security. So these are, you know, right now it's the kickoff of election season. It's Labor Day. We're starting to begin to focus on the campaigns. We're 64 days out, and we're facing a battle of Republicans trying to frame the election one way and Democrats trying to frame the election the other way. And that is what we're about today in terms of the election environment.
Well, that just seems like an incredible amount, because most of these seats are pretty safe seats with all the redistricting going on.
That's absolutely correct. Approximately, in any normal election year, Jack, 95% of the seats should be safe. In this extremely volatile year, only about 85% of the seats should be safe. But that 15% would be enough to allow the Democrats to win the 15 seats they need. And actually, I think they're going to win somewhere in the order of 30 to 35 to 40. That would be enough for the Democrats to win the seats they need to win in order to capture the U.S. House of Representatives, which, by the way, will give us our first ever female Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi.
And what about the Senate? Is there any chance there?
Well, you know, Jack, you caught me there, because last month when I came on this program and predicted that the Democrats would capture the U.S. House of Representatives, I also said that in September I would predict the outcome of the Senate races. Well, I'm not cutting and running, but I am going to tell you that I'm going to delay my prediction for the Senate for another month.
Okay.
Until December.
Right now, I've got us at a 50-50 tie, which would mean the Republicans would retain control of the Senate, because after all, Vice President Cheney gets to break that tie, right?
Right.
There's still some, I think we're going to be looking at pickups in Rhode Island, Pennsylvania, Missouri, Ohio, another state that's escaping me right now. But there are second-tier states, Arizona, Nevada, Tennessee, Virginia, and I'm still kind of looking at what's developing in those states before I can definitively predict the outcome of the Senate race. It's just too early.
Well, it's interesting because some of these people, both in the Senate and the House, are cutting and running from the president because they either feel like Santorum doesn't feel like he's right-wing enough in the war, and a lot of the other ones feel that the war has been a disaster and they're keeping away, although they want the money. They want Bush to come to town to raise money, or call Rove to raise money, but they don't want to campaign with them.
That's an astute observation. And by the way, Jack, your listeners need to know that 8 days from now, Tuesday, September 12th, we are going to see a second U.S. Senator, Lincoln Chafee, a Republican from Rhode Island, lose his primary race. You know,
yeah.
Of course, we've already seen Joseph Lieberman on the Democratic side lose his primary race to Ted Lamont. 8 days from now, Chafee is going to be joining that population of congressional incumbents who have lost the races. And this isn't even going to be a close race, Jack. It's a done deal already.
Well, for us junkies who miss West Wing, there's a new show on Sundance called The Hill. And it's a half-hour weekly series. I'm not sure how many shows they're going to have. But it's a real live story based on a Democratic congressman that represents West Palm Beach, of the area of Florida. And it's just really interesting to see how the staff actually works and what they do. And, in fact, the chief of staff is a gay person. And it's a really interesting show. I think this week will be the third installment. And you know, it's just neat to see this. And the first show had to deal with the election in 2004 and how they were all disappointed, and of course they all went down to campaign in Florida.
Very, very interesting. And what makes it even more interesting, Jack, is that West Palm Beach happens to be the site of one of the most hotly and closely contested U.S. House races this year.
Well, I'm wondering if it's the same person, because it looked like he was in a pretty safe district. Although the Senate race in the primary in Florida seems to be interesting, too, because Catherine Harris is running for that seat, and even the Republicans are don't want her to win.
Oh, boy, that one's a washout. She is trailing the Democratic incumbent, Senator Ben Nelson, I believe, by about 25 points in the polls. Blowout city.
Absolutely. So, well, you know, we don't want to count it until the election is in, but it does look good. But that doesn't mean that if you have to be registered to vote, you have to go out and vote. And even if you think you're in a safe district, you need to register that vote, because certainly we have that interesting race here, the Tom DeLay race, which is going to be interesting because only the Democrat for the actual, and you know, they're having two elections at the same time. They're having one election to fill it for the last month and a half, and which could go into a runoff if there isn't a majority. And then they're also having the election for the entire term. And the election for the entire term, the Republicans have to do a write-in. So it looks somewhat strong for Nick Lampson right now.
Lampson is definitely going to win. But, Jack, you raise a very important point. Everybody needs to register. everybody needs to vote. If this election breaks the way I think it's going to break, then there is actually an outside chance that Democrats could perhaps take one or both chambers of the Texas legislature.
Wow.
That would be wonderful.
Things are breaking in a big way in terms of voter identification, voter turnout, and voter behavior.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
That's encouraging.
All right. Anything else, David?
Well, just one thing for your visit, for your listeners to look for, Jack. Congress is coming back for a very short session in September before they go home and campaign. Democrats in both the House and the Senate are going to be sponsoring no confidence resolutions on Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld.
Wow, they might get some Republicans to vote on that too, huh?
Exactly. That's going to be one of the big political stories coming out of the month of September.
Great. Great. So, David, what is your daytime job?
Well, Jack, thanks. For my day job, I'm the communications director for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. You can visit us on the web at www.ncadp.org. Again, that's ncadp.org.
Well, David Elliott joins us the first Monday of every month, including this holiday, which we appreciate.
Yeah, thank you very much, David.
Always gives us some insight from Washington. Thank you, David.
Thank you for having me.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 2nd, 2006. Polish Prime Minister Jarosław Kaczynski remarkably claimed this week that there is no homophobia in his country, and that gays and lesbians are well treated there. Following a meeting with European Commission President José Manuel Barroso in Brussels, Kaczynski responded to several reporters' questions on the subject, saying, "Don't believe the myth of a homophobic, xenophobic Poland." He invited journalists to go to Poland to see for themselves. "You can go to clubs, you can ask around, you will not see anything bad," he said. According to Kaczynski, there are gay politicians in very high political positions in his country. That might shock Polish LGBT activists. No federally elected representative in Kaczynski's government is out. "For decades, it has been known about many prominent people. They are homosexuals," he said, "and it has never been a problem. What we have now in Poland are gay clubs, gay literature, gay press. This is all functioning normally." Kaczynski's twin brother Lech was elected president last October in a campaign marked by frequent homophobic slurs, prompting the European Union to issue a stern warning to the government not to limit the rights of gays and lesbians. Lech had banned LGBT pride parades in 2004 and 2005 when he was mayor of Warsaw. A parade permit was issued this year under a new mayor, but more than 1,000 skinheads and ultranationalists lined the route throwing eggs and bottles. Pride marchers in Krakow were similarly attacked. It was the Polish PM's first visit to Brussels since taking office 2 months ago, designed in part to ease concerns about the treatment of LGBT people in his country, and to address other issues involving Poland's membership in the European Union. Despite Kaczynski's assurances that Poland's sexual minorities are not being mistreated, LGBT members of the European Parliament say the record shows otherwise.
A pride parade in Jerusalem, this time planned for September 21st, is once again being opposed by authorities, who say they will not allow the event to be held so close to the Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah. Organizers from the Jerusalem Open House had scheduled the parade during Jerusalem's World Pride Festival in August, but were denied a permit, which they didn't contest after hostilities broke out in southern Lebanon. Soon after Open House announced its intention to hold the parade on September 21st, Jerusalem police denied a permit, but they said they might consider other dates for it. Pride parades have been held in the city since 2002 and were relatively peaceful until last year when an ultra-Orthodox man claiming guidance from God stabbed 3 people and was subsequently charged with attempted murder. Open House Director Haggai Elad told Ynet this week that his group intends to hold the parade on September 21st as planned. In May, the Jerusalem District Court ruled that it's illegal for the municipality to discriminate against the LGBT community, and Elad warned that, "We will not hesitate to petition the court."
Gays and lesbians have been organizing in the small African nation of Ghana. But the government has banned what was reportedly an international LGBT conference scheduled there this month. During some of the small programs we organize in Accra, we get about 400 to 500 gays attending. Prince McDonald, the president of the Gay and Lesbian Association of Ghana, told a local radio station last week. And when we have big programs, we get thousands of people coming from other regions. Ghana's information minister, Kwamena Bartels, said this week that the government became aware of an international LGBT conference reportedly organized by local activists and to have included people from throughout Africa when clergy brought it to his attention. The BBC reported it's been difficult to establish precisely who was organizing the conference at the Accra International Conference Center. But Bartels said it would not be permitted because homosexuality is punishable by imprisonment in his country. Government does not condone any such activity which violently offends the culture, morality, and heritage of the entire people of Ghana, Bartels told the Ghana news agency, saying that the government wants to make it absolutely clear that it shall not permit the proposed conference anywhere in Ghana. Bartels warned that disciplinary action would be taken if anyone was found to have broken the law. Managers of the International Conference Center have denied that such a conference was due to take place there.
The final defendant in the notoriously brutal murder of Northern California transgender teen Gwen Araujo heard his sentence this week. 23-year-old Jaron Nabors will spend up to 11 years in prison. He pleaded guilty to voluntary manslaughter early in the case and showed authorities where the teen's body was buried. 17-year-old Gwen Araujo was viciously beaten, tied up, and strangled in October 2002 after men she'd had sexual encounters with learned she was biologically male. Two men were sentenced to 15 years to life in prison after being convicted of second-degree murder, while another pleaded no contest to manslaughter and received a 6-year prison sentence.
The Arizona Supreme Court this week upheld a proposed constitutional amendment set for the November 7th ballot that would not only ban same-gender marriage but also domestic partnerships in the state. The justices, upholding a lower court ruling, rejected arguments that the measure violates Arizona's single-subject rule for ballot initiatives. The advocacy group Arizona Together and five heterosexual couples, most of them elderly, had sued to keep the measure off the ballot. Several Arizona localities, including Phoenix, Tucson, Tempe, and Pima County, offer domestic partnerships. Same-gender couples have not been the only ones signing up. They become popular among seniors who want to keep health benefits that would be jeopardized by remarriage. The ballot measure has been endorsed by all three of Arizona's Catholic bishops, as well as Republican senator and possible 2008 presidential candidate John McCain, who defended his stance last year by saying that the measure would allow the people of Arizona to decide on the definition of marriage. A poll of the state's registered voters released this week by a TV station in Tempe indicated growing opposition to the measure, but it's too soon to predict the November outcome.
Openly lesbian candidate Patricia Todd has been reinstated as the Democratic Party's candidate to represent Birmingham's District 54 in the Alabama legislature. The party executive committee voted 95-87 this week to reject an earlier subcommittee ruling that disqualified Todd, as well as her runoff election opponent Gaynell Hendricks, because both had violated a party rule requiring candidates to file a campaign finance disclosure report with the party chairperson. Party chairperson Joe Turnham noted that no candidate has filed one since 1988. The conflict appeared to turn more on the race of the candidates than on sexual orientation. Alabama Democratic Party Executive Committee Vice Chairperson Joe Reed, a powerful black politician, had written a letter to African American leaders in Jefferson County before the July 18th runoff election, asking them to support Hendricks, who is black, so that a black person would be elected from the majority black district. Todd, who is white, defeated Hendricks by 59 votes. There's no Republican candidate in the district race, which means that Todd will likely become Alabama's first openly gay or lesbian state legislator.
The Uniformed Services University, a U.S. Department of Defense, Medical, Nursing, and Graduate School, has its first openly gay man as student council president. Patrick M. High was elected by a student body that includes uniformed personnel in the armed forces. Most who graduate there take public health jobs with the government. High served 9 years in the Illinois Army National Guard and is currently a Ph.D. candidate at the university. His election, says C. Dixon Osborne of the queer advocacy group Service Members Legal Defense Network, is just the latest in a series of signs that those serving in our armed forces are ready to welcome openly gay colleagues. A study conducted last year for his group concluded that the U.S. military could attract as many as 41,000 new recruits if gays and lesbians were able to be open about their sexual orientation. And a recent poll by the Annenberg Foundation found that 50% of junior enlisted personnel now favor allowing gays and lesbians to serve openly. Meanwhile, a heterosexual West Point graduate received a prestigious academic award last month for his thesis opposing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the U.S. ban on lesbian, gay, and bisexual service members. And young gay and lesbian college students have been trying to enlist at military recruitment centers across the country as part of a national protest by the non-denominational group Soul Force, which organized demonstrations earlier this year at college campuses that reject lesbi-gay students. But the top two veterans organizations in the U.S., the American Legion and the Veterans of Foreign Wars, this week passed motions supporting a continuation of the policy. A bipartisan coalition of about 120 Congress members supports legislation to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That measure is going nowhere fast, however.
But finally, it appears that Argentina will be repealing a law that makes it a crime for members of the military to engage in homosexual acts. The national government intends to abolish the entire military justice code and create a new armed forces justice system. Among scores of changes, the new laws will allow service by openly lesbian or gay personnel. Colonel Judge Advocate Manuel Lozano, a member of the legal commission designing the new system, told reporters that it's a matter of people's private lives. The ban was nonsense.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 2nd, 2006. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Rick Watts.
that was Dropmore Scott, a all-lesbian band from Wisconsin. And that was their song Pretty Lip from their self-titled album. And with our next segment, here's Jennifer Renee.
And this is Jennifer, and we have our guest tonight is Kelly Smith. Kelly and I, we were just trying to figure out how long we've known each other. And whenever somebody talks to me about how long they've known me, they've got to realize, well, I've known Jennifer 11 years, and I've known you for about 15, so it is a bit of a difficulty. But Kelly and I have known each other a long time. She is a very special person in my own life because about 11 years ago, when I was just a little boy in the darkness, anybody want to translate that? That means that I only went out at night dressed as a woman. She was a good friend. Our friend Tracy, who and the three of us would go out, and they were very supportive of me. And, you know, when I was in need the most of someone to say, come on, girl, let's go, Kelly was there for me. And part of that has to do with her story she's going to tell us tonight about learning about peace and enlightenment through Avatar. Now, I know we've talked periodically, but in the question that came up at the very opening of the show, I didn't have an answer for Jack about Avatar and what you do. Okay, Kelly, it's your turn now. What is it you do anyway?
I'm a speaker, a trainer, and a teacher. And what I do is I speak and train on communications, and my background is in communications, and I help people to understand their value and the value of their contribution, and I do it all through the avenue of communications.
Now, I know that you have been very important with a lot of, as a public speaker and speaker with different groups, about empowerment, especially in as far as women are concerned. Also some men, too, who want to be enlightened. But basically, women's empowerment. I know we talked about that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well,
you're speaking.
I do a lot of women's conferences, and with the women, we're specifically taking communication skills and helping women understand that a lot of their empowerment, the next step for women in society, is really in regards to excellent mastering the art of communication.
Okay, well, in what way? What are you doing? What skills are you giving the women in your courses? Without giving away your confidential secrets, something about that the women out in our audience may be able to understand or maybe take to their own lives today.
I think what's really important to know is that everything we say and everything we do, everything we think is a communication. How we act, how we show up in life, every single thing is a communication, whether it's verbal or whether it's an action. So really examining our belief systems and having a high commitment to our value system is huge.
All right, that's a lot. That's a lot right there. Most people have problems just identifying what they do believe, let alone being able to overcome and find new beliefs. Now, I understand from the public speaking now, but how does that evolve into your Avatar work? And first of all, explain what that is.
Okay. So Avatar is, the mission of Avatar is to create an enlightened planetary civilization.
Oh, that's a mouthful.
Shall I say it slower?
Say it slower.
Create an enlightened planetary civilization.
Okay, I like that idea. That's a good idea. How are we going to get there?
Well, the first thing that we want to do, especially when it comes down to the GLBT type of issues, is that we want to understand separation. We want to understand what's really going on out there. Wake up to the fact that we have so many judgments and so many ways that we create separation, and then have the ability and the tools to go examine our belief systems and understand how the mind works, how the human is put together.
Well, a separation, in what way? Are we talking about
What? Separation in race or
okay, so
in
like,
ethnicity, gender,
great
all
question.
Of the above.
Great question. Let's first just take a look at in our communications.
Okay.
Okay, I meet someone for the first time. The first thing I'm going to do is what everyone else does. It's the human ego sets it up. It's how humans think. The first thing that we're going to do is we're going to categorize each other. In a nanosecond, we're going to categorize each other. So there's a filter that's going to go up first, and it's going to be around gender, probably. Okay. So I'm going to meet you, and I'm going to go, oh, nice to meet you. Oh, female, male. There goes the filter, first filter. So now everything you say and everything I say to you is going to be through a gender filter. That's how I'm going to interpret what you say to me and how I'm going to decide what I'm going to say to you. But that's not all. Wait, there's more.
Okay.
What else? Filter number two. Ooh, what age are you?
Oh.
Okay, so now I'm going to go in and I'm going to put in another filter in a nanosecond. You're from this age group, I'm from that age. Oh, wait a minute, there's still more. Let's see. What about socioeconomic background? All the different filters that go up in 1 second, we categorize each other. And so, and what that categorization really is around, it's around judgments. And what happens in our communications, the problem with that is that we miscommunicate, we misinterpret our messages all the time. And the judgment, what the judgment does in that filtering process is it creates separation so that we're not just human beings relating to each other and determining and deciding what to do and how to act in the world and what to do with the world and think clearly. Well, it's laden with judgment.
Well, I think we all are we either are judged or are judging something just like you described. Well, how do we overcome those things?
To go in, examine the belief systems.
Okay.
And really understand the blueprint. There's like a structuring of our beliefs. We are walking, breathing, living manifestations of intricate belief systems that are all downloaded on a hard drive, so to speak. And so what we want to do is we want to wake up and really understand what it is we believe. Not what we want to believe, not what we think we believe, but what is it that we really believe, and understand that our beliefs actually create our experiences. So how I experience life, how I experience you, is based on whatever belief it is that I'm filtering through.
Well, again, I go back to, is that how through Avatar, to be enlightened, go beyond those judgments to
exactly
find a clearer communication between people.
Exactly.
And communities. I know that for many years, I guess it was at least 10 years, there's been a struggle between acceptance for the transgender community that I'm part of and the gay and lesbian community. Now, after we finally started talking and realizing we had common goals and needs, that we could help one another, you know, it's the GLBT community, not the GL community. Is that part of that? And I know that you'd said earlier that the GLBT people are very much a part of Avatar. And how is that, as far as you've seen in your studies and all, in Avatar, how does that equate to enlightening and getting beyond our judgments?
That is a really good question. I think really it's just about true liberation, human liberation. You know, it's truly about understanding that we are all the same, and that is the position of power, true power. The position of true power is to live in spiritual virtue and to not create any more separation or division, to unite. And so every organization that I've been a member of and studied and been trained in and trained as a trainer in since as far back as my training goes in my early 20s has all been international organizations that has policies that are liberating to every segment of the human race.
Mm-hmm.
You name it. Liberation policy and reevaluation counseling. In my 20s, I was certified to teach in that modality, and you know, they narrowed it down to every single oppression that you could come up with that creates separation among human beings.
Go ahead.
That's just I'm sitting here going, oh wow, okay. The thing I was wondering about too is that where did all of this start? Now I know a little about your history because I've known you so long. But the people out there don't. Tell us a little bit about your background. Just a little few things. Or do you want me to tell them for you? I'll do it. I'll tell them everything I know.
Let's hear your take on it.
I'll tell you one thing. Kelly is a divorced mom of two boys. She's not only has a full-time speaking career and studying avatars, the avatar master, but also is homeschooling one of your sons. And how do you do all that?
As a female today, in today's world, and this is what I recommend to anybody that lives in today's day and age, at least in the U.S. for sure, is that I have always looked at customizing my life. And that's another thing that I love about the avatar training and the reevaluation counseling, every kind of training that I've ever been involved in, is truly about examining belief systems, like not taking on anybody's belief systems, not taking on a mass belief system that says you're supposed to be this way, you're supposed to believe that, you're supposed to do it this way or that way. And so I have for a very, very long time taken the viewpoint of I'm customizing my life. I don't care who it makes sense to or who it doesn't make sense to, because it's what's going to work for me and my family. And to maintain flexibility, complete and total flexibility. And that's another great thing about examining and exploring your belief system, is that you can regain flexibility so that you're not living in a rigid, rule-making, laden kind of life. It's like, okay, things change. You have to be flexible and change with things and completely look at your life and what makes sense, what's important, what's the priority, what's the next step that you take in your life to make things work.
That's fascinating. I was wondering, that isn't that what you had to do with your sons? You when you took one out to homeschool, you had to be flexible with your own family to make it best for them. And I've always admired you for that. I wouldn't do that. I mean, I'm just lazy. What can I say? But but I identify with what you just said, because basically most of my life I was told personally that I had a rigid set of things I was supposed to be. That was to be a boy, and which worked fine when I wanted to play football and, you know, baseball and basketball and those things, and in an age when girls didn't do that. But at some point, it was a realization for me that I was just acting out what somebody had told me to do. Again, going back to the beliefs, and I know in my 12-step program that I'm in, I went through a period of evaluation, and one of them was to identify what was the truth and what was a belief that I had that somebody had given me. And it was rather a very awakening time for me. In your own experience, especially, I love the fact that you do a lot of public speaking and seminars. Tell us a little bit about your seminars and how we can get in touch with you. If anyone out there wants to be involved in a seminar, how would they find out about it?
Okay, well, I do keynote speaking, and it's motivational, inspirational speaking. The title of my keynote is Wake Up, Grow Up, Show Up. And it is communications-based training, and it is to help people really feel and understand that they have tremendous value, and then take that value and carry it over to understanding the value of their contribution that they have to make, and really value their contribution so that they can get out there. And it's also that I have some seminar training that I do that is just straightforward communication skills. I help people, organizations create an alignment system for how to communicate on a day-to-day basis within their organization.
Alignment system? Tell me more about that. What do you mean by alignment?
Basically, how to communicate.
You open your mouth and it comes out.
No, we're going to agree. We're going to agree on some skills.
Oh, okay.
We're going to agree on some principles.
Okay.
We're going to get really clear about what we currently do out there and what doesn't work and what will work and create alignment. We're going to create a specific plan for what we want to aim for inside of our organization to communicate. Effectively.
Okay. Effective communication within, and that's like an inside your own family too. It can be taken into business and family, relationships within organizations.
It certainly does.
Amongst your friends, for
it
that
certainly
matter.
Does. And the seminar trainings that I do, most of the feedback that I get is that people are excited about taking back the information to work the next day, and they comment that they're really also excited about taking it back into their personal relationships, their personal lives as well.
So
that's the seminar training.
Okay.
And then there's the Avatar course that I also teach. To get in touch with me, to contact me, to ask more, you just would go to my website, kellyspeaks.net. www.kellyspeaks.net.
Okay. All right. I'll remember that. We'll say it again toward the end, because one of the things I'm just fascinated by this, because in a personal experience here, was the fact that a number of years ago when I had had transitioned and I was out in the public and trying to make ends meet, I found, a dead end every time I turned around. Prejudice, judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And Kelly was inspirational, and she just simply said that, believe in prosperity, believe in yourself, and empower yourself. Speak out is what I remember so clearly you said, that you have something to say, so say it. And at that moment in time, I felt like the shrinking violet. I didn't want to do anything, and of course now I'm sitting on a radio show, but also by speaking out and saying what was on my mind and becoming my own person, thanks to under the mentorship of Kelly, I have been able to do a lot of things that I never expected to do. One of them being here on the radio station, but most of all, president of the GLBT Political Caucus, which is there's nowhere in my resume that I ever planned to do that. That was something that came by inspiration and perspiration. So, one more time, tell me again how we get in touch with you. I want to make sure we get that clear. It's
kellyspeaks.net. And do we have a moment so I can talk a little bit about you?
Oh, yeah, I want you to.
Well, I remember when I was coaching Jennifer, and she was having trouble figuring out what to do, because suddenly Jennifer was not employable in the career path that she was in. And
the glass ceiling was there in full force for me.
She was putting out job resumes and doing interviews and just right and left and left and right, and nothing was returning. And so I helped her figure out how to start her own business. And one of the things that I picked up on clearly was that she had a strong message and she could help a lot of people in the GLBT community. And so I got in front of her and I was fired up. I was excited. I was like, Jennifer, you have to go speak. You have to talk out. You've got a story to tell, girl. You're going to help a lot of people. She wasn't a little bit nervous and clammy, like she just said. She was actually four sheets of white, if there is such a thing.
Oh,
she
too true,
me,
too true.
She told me no way was she ever going to do that. And here she is, not only is she doing a radio show and on a political caucus, as you say, but also does seminar training as well.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah. Teaches at universities and has done some other business seminars as well that she's taught. So I'm real proud of Jennifer and the progress she's made. I've been blessed to watch and to support.
Much better than that other person we knew before 12 years ago. anything else you'd like to say before we close?
I just like to say that I think, it's really important for people to stop every once in a while, and even better, more than every once in a while, and really feel their value. To really, really get it that they do count, that they make a difference, their contribution is vital, and that, get out and live your life expansively. You know, if you've gotten discouraged, letting go of dreams and things like that, it might just be time to sit down and really determine what's your next step to build the support in your life that you need so that you can really get out there and live an expansive life and go for it. Set it an example. Role model.
Thank you very much. We've been talking to Kelly Smith, speaker, and you can find out more about Kelly at www.kellyspeaks.net. And this is Jennifer Renee.
Something a little different. Tony Bear, B-A-R-R-E. The album is called Bear Maneuvers, music that fits. The song was top to bottom. And you might hear that music at the Ripcord, 4 a.m., you know, who knows. Up next is David Brown, a folk artist from New York, with Mr. Right.
90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
So you don't want to miss a week of This Way Out's global news or great music by openly LGBT artists, hearing about a new movie even before the buzz begins, getting on-scene coverage of important news as it's happening, or queer historic sounds from our archives? The answer is a subscription to This Way Out. You can get our programs on great-sounding CDs or audio cassettes delivered right into your mailbox and for less than a newspaper subscription. For easy how-to information, simply email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us for more information at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. With troops committed to conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq, and with an admitted shortage of fresh recruits, the U.S. military continues to discharge lesbians and gays at the rate of 2 a day, according to the Service Members Legal Defense Network. Many of these booted soldiers are highly trained experts with skills vital to the Bush administration's so-called war on terror. There may be a new, more dangerous show on the world stage now, but these discharges are a rerun of the experiences of lesbian armed forces personnel during the first Iraq War, conducted by the first George Bush. Pentagon policy at that time completely banned gay or lesbian military service. More than a decade after a fledgling Democratic President Bill Clinton and an entrenched Republican Congress instituted the allegedly more compassionate Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, there remain common threads in the stories of service members then and now. This Way Out carried the voices of gays and lesbians involved in the Gulf War during 1991, but many of these stories could be last week's news. As the year began, the United States, technically the United Nations, was just days away from beginning its annihilation of Iraq in the Gulf War.
I'm ready to serve my country and go with my unit to the Persian Gulf. When I get back, I don't want to be discharged because of the fact that I'm a lesbian.
The war in the Middle East has also become a battleground for lesbians and gays in the U.S. military. Army specialist Donna Lynn Jackson wrote to her commanding officer earlier this month saying, "I am an open lesbian and I wish to be deployed as such."
I was detached from all my friends. They were very supportive. It's like, no big deal, you know, so you're gay. So what? They wanted me to go with them. Instead, I was pulled out of my unit and attached to this other unit and then processed very quickly for discharge.
The San Francisco Chronicle reported several reservists came out to their commanders and were told they would still be sent to Saudi Arabia, even though they might face discharge on their return.
Brigadier General M.G. Vergamini, the Defense Department's Director for Manpower and Personnel, has called those media reports, quote, preposterous and categorically untrue. The policy that homosexuality is incompatible with military service remains in effect. Period.
February 9th through 18th marked the fourth annual national conference of the Black, Gay, and Lesbian Leadership Forum, held this year in Los Angeles. Phil Wilson, the co-chair, opened the conference.
President Bush vetoes the 1990 Civil Rights Bill and bombs Baghdad in the name of democracy. We must speak. Our government spends $1 billion a day to kill people. But some of us have been in a war for a long time. We have been in a war against a monster more insipid, more dangerous than Saddam Hussein will ever be. This monster lives in our bodies. It is called HIV. Where are the Patriot missiles that will destroy this enemy? Where are the scuds of drugs and treatments we need to fight this enemy? Where are the weapons of health care and cures we need to save the hundreds of thousands of us who are infected with HIV? We must speak.
This is the CBS Evening News. Sam Rather reporting. Good evening. We're going to take a break for a commercial just now.
AIDS activists disrupted national TV coverage of the Persian Gulf War to protest the lack of media coverage of AIDS. Other protesters interrupted taping of the McNeil-Lehrer NewsHour, some chaining themselves to the desk.
The status of lesbians and gays in the United States Armed Forces remains controversial as fighting in the Gulf enters its second month. Dozens of gays and lesbians in uniform are telling advocacy groups that, despite denials from the military, a so-called stop-loss policy is operating, which delays what would otherwise be immediate discharges until the war is over.
Between 300,000 and 500,000 people marched for peace on both coasts of the United States. In Washington, D.C., about 250,000 filled the Capitol Mall. And in San Francisco, AIDS quilt organizer Cleve Jones was one of the featured speakers.
President Bush has given us a lot of reasons for fighting this war as the administration casts about for new ways to market Operation Desert Storm. A war to save our cities. A war to conquer disease. A war to build schools and rescue our children from despair. A war for clean air and water. A war against bigotry and ignorance. A war for parks and playgrounds and homes. These are the wars worth fighting. The wars are here at home in America. No blood for oil. Bring the troops home.
While most of the troops returning home from the Persian Gulf War were met with parades and celebrations, former United States Marine Corporal Eric E. Barker, the model Marine, receiving high grades for proficiency and conduct, as well as high praise for energy and self-motivation, was being hustled out of the Corps. Barker recounted how, while serving his country in the Saudi Arabian desert, he was accused by another Marine of having committed the crime of sodomy. His commanding officer fired him from his job and stripped him of his ammunition.
There's like a half a mile of open roads that we had to walk to get from the camp to the headquarters building. And anyone, any Arab driver, had access to the roads that we traveled to get over there. And without my ammunition, I was defenseless. They let me keep my rifle, but it's no good without ammunition.
Barker accepted a general discharge, which is less than the unconditional honorable discharge given to other troops returning from the Persian Gulf War theater. Because the Marines refused to allow testimony on his behalf, Barker waived his right to what he believed would be an unfair hearing. Now attending college in Los Angeles, he must face the prospect of job hunting with a discharge document which contains homosexuality admission as the reason for involuntary separation from the Marine Corps. For Barker, as well as for tens of thousands of others, that means either hiding years of military service from prospective employers or closing himself to many job opportunities in a social arena where discrimination against homosexuals is still rampant.
I was sitting in the foxhole, dodging all the shrapnel, waiting for my time to come. When along came a general with word from the Capitol, told me that I'd have to run. So I asked, what's the problem? General said, son, I've heard you're a queer. So you better run along now. I didn't like you anyhow. Get your butt out of here. Well, I've been doing a good job. My record compares to none. It's okay if I kill a man, but I better not get caught loving one. And the moral of the story is to fight for love and glory, never minding if you're straight or gay. But I'm proud to be queer, that's the reason that I'm here, fighting for freedom in the USA.
I think that a person's sexual orientation should not be a bar to military service.
Lawrence Korb, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manpower under President Reagan from 1981 to 1985, and an advisor to the current Bush administration, told the Human Rights Campaign Fund, "You will win. The only question is when."
The research shows that people who are homosexuals are no greater security risk than heterosexuals, and that a person's orientation is not necessarily related to his or her conduct.
He believes President Bush is too influenced by right-wing Republicans to support a policy change, but that court decisions or public pressure will bring it about. He said, "Once you hit the right buttons, the resistance will crumble, and people will say, why were we so worried about this?"
A major survey indicates that an impressive majority of U.S. citizens of every demographic and political stripe disagree with the current policy of discharging gays and lesbians from the military. When asked, should the government discharge a person just because he or she is homosexual? 81% of the respondents said no. The results of the professionally conducted telephone poll by Penn and Schoen Associates were announced by the Human Rights Campaign Fund. Executive Director Tim McFeely.
I think 81% is a very large number. Any politician would give his or her eye teeth for that kind of approval rating. It's estimated that about 1,500 people are discharged for this purpose every year. And when you think about the money that's spent in training those 1,500 people and how much money is spent in processing the discharge, we're talking about spending millions of taxpayers' dollars on this policy.
In response to questioning by openly gay Congressman Barney Frank, Secretary of Defense Dick Cheney suggested he disagrees with the military's policy that homosexuals present a security risk.
The defense secretary stressed he inherited rather than formulated the military's policy on homosexuals. Dick Cheney told a House panel that the policy for many years is that a gay lifestyle is incompatible with military service.
There have been times in the past when it's been generated on the notion that somehow there was a security risk involved. Although I must say, I think that's a bit of an old chestnut.
I think that racism, sexism, and homophobia are like three strands in a rope that's placed where women, people of color, and gay men and lesbians are just not allowed to go. It says white men allowed, that's it.
After 5 years of waiting, U.S. Army Captain Dusty Pruitt will finally have her day in court. Pruitt was honorably discharged by the Army in 1986, 3 years after revealing her lesbianism in an interview with the Los Angeles Times. She's mounted a legal challenge to be reinstated, and the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled August 19th that the military must prove a rational basis for its 48-year-old ban on gay and lesbian personnel. The court also asserted it would reject the military's traditional tactic of citing existing anti-gay prejudice within its ranks as a rationale for continuing the policy.
There are seven reasons why gay men and lesbians supposedly cannot serve. Six of those have to do with the prejudice of others, and one has to do with the fact that gay men and lesbians are supposedly a greater security risk. We feel that if the Army has to put on a defense, their own studies will bear out that gay men and lesbians are not in any way a higher security risk than anybody else. Gay men and lesbians are the last legal group of individuals that one can persecute, and people are about doing that with all their might.
Citing a concern over the spread of AIDS, a U.S. federal judge upheld the ban on gays and lesbians in the military.
U.S. District Judge Oliver Gash ruled that the armed forces have the right to ban homosexuals because they pose a high risk of transmitting AIDS to other soldiers. The Pentagon did not request such a ruling. They had asked that the ban on homosexuals be upheld for legal, not medical reasons. Judge Gash turned down a request by Joseph Stefan to reinstate him into the Navy. Stefan was forced to resign from the Naval Academy just before graduation in 1987 when his officers learned of his sexual orientation. Three times during the legal proceedings, Judge Gash referred to Stefan as a homo. Gregory King of the Human Rights Campaign Fund says Gash's ruling is based on bigotry and ignorance.
This is really a serious miscarriage and reflects the lack of information that's held by even intelligent members of our legal profession.
Stefan's attorneys say they'll appeal the judge's ruling. The Pentagon says it will have no comment on the ruling until all appeals are ended.
Together we can find the strength.
reports from 1991 featured Gulf War-era service members. Army Captain Dusty Pruitt's 12-year legal battle was resolved in 1995 through a ruling by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which the U.S. Supreme Court refused to review. She was reinstated, promoted to major, and then retired from the Army Reserves. Since 1993, it's been the policy of the U.S. military that gays and lesbians can serve only on the condition that they remain in the closet. Legislation to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell currently remains on the congressional back burner. Then, as now, and while supporting the rights of those who choose to serve, several queer advocacy organizations and many LGBT people around the world are also taking part in the movement opposing the U.S.'s current military incursions. Our thanks to 1991-era This Way Out reporters Cindy Friedman, Mark Saccomano, Mary Van Clay, Joey Flyer, Bert Weiland, Dave Buell, and Pacifica Radio News reporters Selma Lebrecht and Matt Binder for their contributions to this 15 Years On review. Additional thanks to Dave Buell for his original digital mastering. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Tanya Kane Perry, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, and Graham Underhill contributed program material. Graham Nash, Martin F. Swinger, and Michael Callen performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. Click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable contributions from you, our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special LGBT movie, music, and history CD thank you gifts. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on KRCL, Salt Lake City, Utah, WRIR, Richmond, Virginia, CKDU, Halifax, Nova Scotia, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. We're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
And it is 9:20, and we're going to a song then interview. And this song is by Next Wave on their self-titled album. This track is Stacey Stark, Morning Light. So, enjoy.
Baby, that's right. I just wandered to your door. You know exactly what I came there for. But I can't help it. You just look so beautiful tonight. And I can't wait to see you this way in the morning light. If there's a one thing that can to last a while, and maybe take this lovely little moment and turn it into a long night. I can't wait to see you this way in the morning light. The same, something in the wind.
your name. And every night all the moon shines from your eyes, but I can't wait to see you in the morning.
CD in front of me. I'm sorry.
Okay.
We caught you on one.
David, during This Way Out, there was one of the songs on there. Who was that?
There's a military song, Give Us Our Own Country. It was done by Martin Swinger. I don't believe I ID'd that during the broadcast.
I don't remember hearing it. That's why I thought I'd ask.
How are we doing with This Way Out?
It's doing all right. You know, we were afraid for a while there. It lost its main supporter, Planet Out, and they found Out in America has taken over the sponsorship, and so they're, you know, they're not
great.
Booming, but they're able to make ends meet.
Well, it's a quality program.
Oh, it certainly
and
is.
We're very lucky to have it as part of this show, and it comes off the satellite. They do mm-hmm. it like Sunday afternoon, and they send it up on the satellite.
Right,
we grab it.
And they spend a lot of work in that. It's quality work.
Absolutely.
Correspondents from all over, whatever the news
was. Including you.
Well, including me once a month, yes.
Number of things are coming up. The film festival is coming up. The Gay and Lesbian Film Festival is happening September 22nd to the 24th. And here at KPFT, they have nice little programs.
They are
about
nice.
The films.
Those are. Here, would you like one?
It's more compact than it has been in the past. It's going to be over one weekend at one theater downtown.
Angelica.
And it's going to have a number of different films. So, and online it's HGLFF.org. I would guess it's up to date.
Yeah, I enjoyed that last year. I was on several of the panels and got to see some of the great work last year. I'll be out of town this year, though. I'll be in Atlanta at Southern Comfort Conference, the largest conference for transgenders in the world.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's in its 14th year.
Wow.
And do you rotate cities every year?
No. This is in Atlanta only. They have been putting this thing on. It started out with just a small few groups got together.
Well, I guess Southern Comfort probably wouldn't be in the north then at all.
No, it'd be Northern Comfort. Just doesn't have
doesn't
that
work.
Same ring. But Southern, it's just great. So I'll be there between the 19th and the 24th. So I will be back on the 25th for the show.
And also, Outsmart just came out, and there's a really nice article about Larry Bonnaries,
mm-hmm.
or Bagnaris, depending on
depending
which
on your
yes.
frame of mind, I guess.
Talking about, you know, we just celebrated the one-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina.
And we had him on right after that last year.
Yes, he was here, and talks about how he lived in Houston for a while and how helped raise money for our people that were displaced by the hurricane. But Outsmart has some really good articles and stuff and all the, lots of arts yeah. things coming up in the fall.
Right. The cover, if you haven't seen it, it has Tim Robbins on it. Very good interview. I haven't had a chance to read all of it yet, but I was started on before the show started.
And there's a nice feature on the local rap artist, Miss Money, so I was pleased to see that.
And I understand the Houston Voice is going to a new format.
That's what I hear.
It's going to be a monthly. It's going to come out mid-month, and I haven't seen it yet.
Like a 5x9 size, I believe?
Sort of like a twit size,
yeah,
I'm guessing.
I wasn't going to use that description. Since you did, okay.
Yes, but we all remember that, as though.
Yes. Hopefully with more content.
Well, I don't know if it's going to have
not just
content.
Advertising. Yeah.
Well, but I wanted to say that supposedly they're also going to be updating their website a lot more often, but the publication will be just coming out monthly around the middle of the month.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And I'm trying to, in 2 weeks, get someone from The Voice on so we can ask them all about it.
Okay. Next week... We know what we have on next week. It's the anniversary. It's
9/11, the anniversary of 9/11.
I believe
and
we have two. Ellie's going to help us with
Ellie's going to help us with the rundown for next week.
Well, next week we've got. Next week we've got a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to have a segment, which I set up, about how September 11th has affected and not affected the gay and lesbian community, specifically in New York, but also nationwide. What else?
You have a second guest from New York, don't you, Ellie?
I'm having two guests. One is the communication director from the Gay and Lesbian Center up there. I don't have the information right in front of me, but I know they're going to be there. And we're also going to have Mr. Silverman from Transgender Legal, who is going to discuss September 11th legislation's impact on transgender people's ability to get proper documentation. Otherwise, we've got the usual news wrap with This Way Out, and somebody's got Joan Devlin talking with Service Members International about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So that should be very exciting, and
we'll have to be here for that.
Yeah, yeah. we'll have to listen even.
Well, And, of course, we've got all the usual goodness with myself and all these people.
In the all-star cast. Ellie's supporting cast.
Ellie's supporting cast. That's right.
So that's happening next week. And, you know, you can always listen to back shows, up to about 2 months' worth of back shows. Go to kpft.org, and there is a tab there for archives.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually listen to it or download it, which makes it real nice.
And you can go back almost 60 days. One last thing. I always like to put in there, this Wednesday is the Houston GLBT Political Caucus General Meeting at 7 p.m. on Wednesday at 3400 Montrose, Suite 207. If you want to get further information, you can go to the website, www.hglbtpc.org.
We're going to finish out the hour with a special interview with an artist I much respect named Scott Free. His music is influenced by a lot of different genres, as you'll hear, but he's very political. He's not afraid to be very political, and I like that about him.
Dear Music Heritage
on KPFT in Houston.
Hello, this is J.D. Doyle with a Queer Music Heritage New Music Spotlight. This segment gives me a chance to showcase an artist's latest CD along with some interview comments. And the spotlight this time is on a Chicago artist that I've admired for years, Scott Free. Scott is a queer singer-songwriter whose music has a punk rock foundation, but can vary quite a bit as he tailors the type of song to the message of its lyrics, whether that leads him to rock, pop, punk, or even hip-hop. In fact, prior to his first full-length album, he had a song that made it to the European dance charts. That first album was kind of heavy rock oriented and was called Getting Off. Getting Off, Scott Free, get it? That was in 1997, and his next release in 1999 was called The Living Dead. This one kept the rock, but blended in other elements, like pop and a little dance. I thought it was an excellent album. From it, I want to share about a minute of the song, Not Good Enough.
When we were young, we knew we were different. We didn't know how or why. And as we grew up, we found what was different was only our dreams and desires. But we learned the names that they had for us. We prayed they would never discover us. And as we waited silently, quietly, we learned them. We learned them silently.
And in 2004, he released his third album, and he named it They Call Me Mr. Free. Now, before we get too deep into the interview, I want you to hear a little of the music from that CD. And I kind of have three favorite songs from it. One of them is called The Muffin Song, and I'll let Scott tell you about it first.
The Muffin Song was written a few years back, before I met my partner, Jean. The concept of the song actually came into my head when I was laying in bed with a friend of mine. This was post-sex, and he hates the fact that I credit the song to him. The alternate title of the song is No One's Ever Been In Love With Me. And although it wasn't true, I had not been in a serious relationship in, probably 12, 13 years by that point. And so it felt like no one had ever been in love with me. So I decided that I would start off the CD with that song.
Okay, on to more standard questioning. I first asked Scott where he got the title of the album, They Call Me Mr. Free.
It is ripped from the 1960s film, They Call Me Mr. Tibbs, starring Sidney Poitier. I think the reason for using that title was, of course, to be a little silly, and for some reason it just reminded me of the title of a rap CD. My CD has some rap on it. It's not a rap CD, but I kind of delved into that area, which I hadn't done in many years.
Tell us about the CD itself.
This is my third CD, and the musical styles are extremely varied. I think it's kind of the way I operate when I write songs. I have a concept, an idea for a song, and I really aim in the direction or genre of music that I think best fits the lyric. And then I put them all together on a CD. So I've got lots of genres represented here. I've got your basic rock, there's rap, folk, a little bit of dance, and what I am probably best known for is punk. So it's got all of those aspects. I kind of thought of it as the kitchen sink approach to creating a CD.
How would you compare this CD to your past work?
One of the main differences between this CD and my previous CD, which was called The Living Dead, released in 1999, I decided to kind of delve into other subject matters. It's been my focus to do gay life as a subject matter in song, and although I certainly have a number of queer-related subject matters, I delved into other areas. I have an anti-war song called Never Again and Again, a song about the police torture of individuals by the Chicago Police Department in the 1980s, which has been now well documented, and there are court cases finally starting after a number of years. That's called Fair Trade. I have a song about the record industry called The Emperor's New Song, and I have done a rewriting of the history of the Beatles. It's called John Love Paul. So on this CD, I attempted to aim for a broader range of subject matters than I think the previous CD. I'm certainly known for writing about gay life as a subject matter, and that's always been my focus. And certainly there's a number of songs on this CD that address gay issues, but I wanted to expand a little and just kind of have fun doing it. I think the other aspect of this CD is I've tried to make it very timely. Most of the songs are very recently written, and they're certainly about current topics. There's an anti-war song. There is a song about heterosexual artists performing at gay pride events, which is an issue that I have tried to give some exposure to, publicity to. Not in any way that's meant to be anti-straight. It's just supposed to be pro-gay. It's pro-community. It's trying to help our own.
Can you get a little more into the background of that song?
The reason I wrote Disco Divas was to give a longer life to a particular issue that I've been very interested in within the gay community. At pride events around the country, and I'm sure in other countries also, there has been an emphasis on having disco performers at pride events, and I think that, and the issue I took with that is not a musical genre issue, as it is an issue of us representing and celebrating our own. In most of those situations, the performer is heterosexual, and although certainly it is not meant to be an anti-straight song, I meant to point out that on this one day when we are supposed to show our pride, that we should not be ashamed of our performers, that we should showcase the talent that our community has. This issue is being discussed around the country in different cities. I think it's really important.
Disco Divas sing at Pride Fest to remind us we're second-class citizens. Disco Divas sing at Pride Fest to remind us that straight is better. Music should sing the closet. It shouldn't be honest. All it will lose all its friends. They'll say my music betrays all charade. In love with only pretend.
So that is a song that is, to me, it was very topical. I wrote a song the week of President Reagan's funeral and his administration's ignoring the AIDS crisis at its very beginning and the modern press ignoring that fact when they were eulogizing him.
Reagan says nothing. 500 Americans are in their graves, and President Reagan says nothing. We
What song on this CD are you the most proud?
I would have to say that I'm most proud of the anti-war song on this CD. It's called Never Again and Again, the title of which I had had for many years, and I had actually even written a house track back in the late 80s called Never Again and Again, and it kind of had nonsense lyrics to it. But when our president decided to invade Iraq, I thought of that phrase again, never again and again. And this time I, you know, saw it as a reference to countries' continual aggression and starting of wars. So I thought it was kind of the perfect way to describe how leaders of countries act. And so I rewrote the song entirely. Yeah, that one I'm very, very proud of.
Kings, chiefs, monarchs, presidents, greedy for gold, oil, diamonds, dominance, call upon God, Mars, Allah, Hachiman, lie to the people, deceive them with a cause to believe in. So troops, tribesmen, warriors, marine cadets, raise up their spears, swords, rifles, bayonets, go to their wives, partners, maybes, newlyweds, say goodbye and to a peace, promise never to leave them ever again, never again, never again and again and again, promise never again and again.
I mentioned that I have three favorite songs from this album, and the second one is Battle Hymn of the Intolerant.
I came up with the idea for the song Battle Hymn of the Intolerant the week that President Bush had announced that he was going to be pushing for a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. As is very common for me, I have a tendency to write when I get really, really angry, and I, even though I knew that really it was probably a strategy to get reelected, still it brought to mind, in my opinion, how this country, although it states to the world it is a country of freedom and individual rights, that in reality, if you compare America to other countries around the world, some other countries, we actually lag far behind in human rights issues. We're not the worst by far, but in my opinion, we are not what we say we are. So I thought it would be best to do it in a Civil War era style, and yeah, it's a pretty angry, you know, piece of 3 minutes.
This great nation has shown itself in all its glory. Up on high flies the truth and tenets of this land. Built a fortress upon the wisdom of the mighty. We must fight for the principles for which she stands. Gay shouldn't be allowed to marry. Ladies shouldn't be allowed to vote. Negroes shouldn't be allowed to be free. Shouldn't be. Shouldn't be.
just love that one. Now, most of this interview was recorded prior to the Out Music Awards. They were held in Chicago in June, and Scott Free was the big winner, taking home the two most prestigious honors, that of Out Musician and for Out Song of the Year. The Out Musician Award recognizes not only an artist's musical contributions, but also their contributions to the GLBT community, what they give back. And Scott gives back plenty. A couple of easy examples are the annual Queer is Folk, a musical charity event held in Chicago, and Homo Latte, the longest-running weekly queer performance series in the country. He organized both of them years ago, and they get better every year. And he's been effective at organizing protests, whether it be against the local Pride Fest and their lack of featuring performers from the GLBT community, or protesting the booking of anti-gay reggae artists at Chicago venues. And I think just in general, the political nature of his music should be honored, as he's not afraid to hold a light to hypocrisy or bigotry, whether it be on the national level or even within our own community. After the Yacht Music Awards, my audiophile co-producers and I talk with Scott, and I want to share with you some of his comments. First, you'll hear Chris Wilson.
Okay, we're talking with Scott Free. Scott, you are not only Out Musician of the Year, but Out Song. Were you surprised?
I was completely shocked, yeah. Absolutely. You know, that's the thing about awards. You just never think you're going to win them. So, and you usually don't. That's just how it works. So, yeah, and it was the last two awards presented at the end of the night. So I was really shocked.
One of the things I noticed is how musicians of different genres really connect together. You see, you know, a punk rocker with a country western person, and I don't think you see that anywhere else but the Out Music community. Would you agree?
That's a really good point. I think that's, you know, maybe it's from the fact that we have the two aspects going on. We are from a community, the gay and lesbian community, and yet we're interested in music. So if it was just out there people doing music, that was the only reason that they were together, then you're right. It would probably remain very separate. Whereas in this situation, we have this bond already. And so then to add music to it, it makes much more sense for the different genres to be kind of mixing. So it's great.
Scott, you become the first person to win Out Musician and Out Song. Any comment on that?
Wow. Okay, I didn't know that. I was so thrilled because I know that those are both voted on by the members of Out Music. So I was really, really just so honored to have that. And yeah, just to happen in the same year is phenomenal. I was really floored.
I'm closing this segment with a song that got Scott the award for Out Music Out Song of the Year. But before you hear it, here's Scott's answer to the very leading question, do you have a website?
I do have a website, surprise, surprise, that anyone can go and check out clips of my music and a lot of other information. I do have my bio and press picks and all that kind of stuff. So you can find me on the web at www.scottfree.net.
Okay, by Scott Free, my third favorite song from the album, They Call Me Mr. Free, and this year's Out Music Out Song of the Year. It's called Another Day of Cruelty.
Excuse me, can I have your attention, please? Hey, kids, tired of getting beat up every day after school. Send it before school in the hall and lunch after school. They wait for you after classes and smash your glasses in 18 pieces. Rub your face in dog feces, spit food in your face in the cafeteria. Fill your milk with ammonia so you're choking, the whole crowd goes into hysteria. In the classroom, they leave thumbtacks at your chair on the seat, trip you, then drag you down the stairs by your feet. Hang you upside down on the fence over by the soccer field. Drag you naked from a speeding automobile. And all because you're queer. That's right, queer. You heard the magic words, as if an adult come looking fair. They assure you you're not a pervert, and you can be cured. But if that doesn't work, they prefer to keep it all blurred. They say you must be questioning, they're confused. While they keep pestering, there's gotta be something to choose. And the pressure keeps festering till you can't stand it, you lit a fuse. While they desperately find someone, anyone to accuse. Like it's never a malady or happened accidentally. And you can't think intellectually and the mentality to understand sexuality. As it's faster, it's nasty to think independently. But here's my advice, take it literally.
Just run away, cause I'll hop into the pool. And you never have to take another day of the cruelty.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules. Just leave this place and you'll never see the face again.
Just run away, cause I'll hop into the pool. And you never have to take another day.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules. And if you're gonna say, then sue every last one of them. Okay.
Okay, so you try to go talk to the principal. You know the invisible man, the one that's only doing his job, that says you're the problem. If the phone is locked with this platoon and the car cops our brain on the bottom outside, what's the body of your remains? Makes a kebab of your cranium. You tell him you documented every time you were bashed. He looks at the papers, takes a folder, and throws it in the trash. He says it's time for you to go. And why did you come here? But sir, I can't leave now. They'll throw me in the garbage dumpster. He says he's sick of hearing you rag. And if you didn't act like a fag, well, then you wouldn't get beat up so much. You say I'm touched, and thank you very much. I'm sure if I'm surrounded, you'll be there in the clutch. But I don't know if you noticed, but the crowd's getting restless below. And do you mind if I exit through your windows? I'll take the fire escape down the run for cover before they just cut me and start chasing. I can make it to the bus and hide behind the wheel casing.
Just wanna wait till I hop in the school and you never have to take another day of the cool J.
The bugs and the fools and the cows and the rules just leave this place and you'll never see the face again.
Just wanna wait till I hop in the school and you never have to take another day of the cool J.
The bugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, and if you're gonna stay, then sue every last one of them. So they catch you one day, pin you to the wall, beat you within an inch of your life. Carve the wood faggot into your stomach with a pocket knife. I go to the counselor, show him the gashes. His solution is to put you in special ed classes. So you go to the police, tell them everything that's been happening. You lift up your shirt, show them the scar, they start laughing. They won't make an arrest because it's too much paperwork. You say, thanks a lot if you're a safer jerk. So you finally find a teacher who's willing to assist you. Tell the kids boycott the class, say he must be a sissy too. And they transfer you from school to school, and all the administrators can talk about his immunity values.
Just wanna wait till I hop in your school, and you never have to take another day.
The bugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, just leave this place and you'll never see the face again.
Just run away till I hop in a school and you never have to take another day of the cool J.
The bugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, and if you're gonna save them, sue every last one of them.
Just run away till I hop in a school and you never have to take another day of the cool J.
The bugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, just leave this place and you'll never see the face again.
Just run away till I hop in a school and you never have to take another day of the cool J.
And the fools and the cows and the rules, and if you're gonna say that, then sue every last one of them. That's right, sue the teachers, the principals, the administrators, the school district, the police, sue the assistant to the assistant to the assistant to the dean, sue them all, make them pay.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Polensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Watusi, the Boogaloo, Dancing with a Partner, Group, or just moving and grooving to the beat, you're invited to strut your stuff and enter the Houston Street Dance Competition, presented by the Third Ward Dance Collective.
Compete for cash prizes and an opportunity to perform at the Orange Show Gala. Auditions are on Saturday, September 9th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Orange Show, and the competition finals occur during the Orange Show's 25th anniversary celebration featuring Car Wars on Saturday, September 16th.
You must reserve an audition slot by calling 713-926-6368. So call the Orange Show today to audition for the Houston Street Dance Competition.
Check out orangeshow.org for more information about the Houston Street Dance Competition presented by the Third Ward Dance Collective, KPFT Houston.
KPFT is seeking candidates to run for seats on the local station board. We need you to become involved in this very important election. Please review our candidate materials online. Nominations are open until September the 25th. Your voice can be the difference. Thanks for supporting KPFT, Radio for Peace.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.